Before we begin, if you want to join our growing group of supporters and give $5, $10 or $20 a month to help make the show even better, you can sign up to the Harder Reports Patreon right now and get exclusive access to full, unedited interviews with guests. And now, today's episode. Hello and welcome to the Harder Report. My name's Edward Hardy, and for today's interview, I'm joined by Fred Guttenberg, who, after tragically losing his daughter in the Parkland school shooting, has dedicated his life to fighting against gun violence in America. Fred Guttenberg, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Ed.
As I mentioned in that introduction, you've dedicated your life to fighting against gun violence after what tragically happened at Parkland School. And in honor of your daughter, Jamie, you set up Orange Ribbons for Jamie. Could you tell us a bit about what work you've done with that organization and what you've been doing since then?
We set up Orange Ribbons for Jamie initially to honor Jamie. Orange was Jamie's favorite color. The use of the orange actually has nothing to do with the gun safety movement in our case. The night Jamie died, all of her dance, I call them her dance sisters, but she was a competitive dancer, came over wearing orange ribbons. You know, they knew Jamie's favorite color, and they made thousands of them for us to have over the course of that week and for the funeral. And I was wearing my orange ribbon every single day for weeks. And then probably about 3-4 weeks later, someone came up to me in a store and asked me what the orange ribbon was for. And I told them, and they said, you know, that's the color of the gun safety movement, which I did not know. And I said, that day I came home and I said to my wife, I said, we're going to start a foundation. Up until that day, I had been talking about Jamie starting an orange ribbons movement, but that was about honoring Jamie. That day, I decided to start Orange Ribbons for Jamie, which was to honor things that were important to Jamie in life, but also to educate on why her life was cut short, which gets to the gun violence piece. And so what have we done? Well, clearly, we've been doing our part to educate across this country and the world about gun violence and what we can do to reduce it. But my daughter was a really unbelievable 14-year-old girl who lived her life for others. So she hated bullies and was part of anti-bullying programs. She also dedicated her time to kids with of all abilities, with all different kinds of needs, and volunteered for different programs on the weekend, you know, doing work with kids of special abilities and other things. And that's who my daughter was. So we've continued to support those kinds of activities. And probably the thing we're most proud of from Orange Ribbons is the scholarship program we set up this year for kids of all abilities. And so we have basically three buckets. One bucket is for kids who are going to school to help other people. So maybe you're going to be an occupational therapist, a physical therapist, or a doctor. My wife's an occupational therapist. Jamie wanted to be a pediatric physical therapist. The second bucket, and by the way, those kids need to have a background in dance and community service because Jamie did. The second bucket is for kids who are going to go to school and major in dance, but they also need to have a background in community service because Jamie did. And then the third bucket is the kids of all abilities part. Kids with documented special needs who are going to go on to a post-high school education. You don't typically see scholarship programs made available for them. And because Jamie is who she was, and honestly, my wife is who she is, we have decided to make sure we incorporate that population of children as well. So it's what we're most proud of. This year, we gave out 14 scholarships, which is what we'll do every year because Jamie was 14. And we gave out over $50,000 in scholarships this year. We also believe in doing whatever we can in the moment to help others in need. So we just donated $10,000 to Jose Andres' World Central Kitchen, but he is one of the world's great humanitarians who, wherever people are in need of food and hungry, that guy is there. Wherever there's terrible catastrophe, whether it be a hurricane or the fires just a few months ago in Australia or this pandemic now, he's there setting up his kitchens and his community feeding centers. So we're trying to do whatever we can. And sometimes it's even fun things. Like Jamie and my family were dog obsessed. So we made a donation to the Humane Society, but it wasn't just financial. We turned it into a volunteerism effort with a bunch of the other local teenagers in the area, where they were collecting supplies for the Humane Society, and we were able to deliver it. You know, listen, Orange Ribbons for Jamie isn't, it's more about Jamie and what mattered to her in life than it is about changing the world of guns. I do that in my name. I also have another entity, Orange Ribbons for Gun Safety, which is more of the advocacy piece. But my life, ultimately, when I retire from this advocacy work, I will always be honoring my daughter.
And those activities that you talked about there, there's obviously the comedy night for Orange Ribbons, Jamie, that got Get On Your Feet, the second annual.
The dance-a-thon, yeah.
So tell us a bit about those activities that are coming up this year and that the organization's been doing.
So, you know, we're trying to do events to raise money that bring the community together in a way that seems like Jamie, that feels like Jamie. So, you know, a lot of fundraisers that people do are amazing events. They're high-end dinners with auctions and things like that. But that's not who Jamie was. So we decided to do something different, and we created this dance-a-thon across America because Jamie was a dancer. And we had a really wonderful night. It was our home base event was obviously here in Parkland, but there were dance parties going on across the country. It was the first time since Jamie was killed, and we did it back in October, where I felt like our local community, the kids, the parents, where we could get together and celebrate Jamie and smile and laugh and not feel emotional or want to cry. We honored and celebrated my daughter that night for the first time, and we raised money in doing it. And it's going to become a yearly signature event for us to do this dance-a-thon across America. It gives kids and adults the ability to go out and have a wonderful time while helping us to raise some money to further our cause. The actress Tara Reid created a dance party of her own to help raise money at one of her events out in Las Vegas, which was really wonderful. And we hope to get more people doing things like that next year. And then there was the comedy night, which was back in February. The comedian Jessica Kirsten, who is based in New York, who was following me on Twitter and had reached out at one point. We got to know each other because on a trip of mine to New York, she invited me to one of her shows. And that night after the show, we were talking, and she said she'd love to do a fundraiser for me and committed to finding talent to round out the night. And she did. And it was this unbelievable night. It was a few days after, we did it on February 19th. The two-year remembrance was on February 14th. So it was just a few days later where the community, after going through the trauma of the two-year mark, was able to come together and laugh and smile. And you know, listen, I haven't laughed like that in years. The year before that, we organized a big community event with the Florida Panthers on February 17th. So again, a few days after the one-year remembrance. And that's something we want to do every year, is a few days later, kind of have a moment where people can come together and keep moving forward. You know, two people said to me after Jamie died, you don't move on, you move forward. Everything we do is a process of trying to move forward. One of them was the rabbi at her funeral, and the other one was Vice President Joe Biden. And that's what we try to do. We keep trying to do things that allow myself, my wife, my son, and our extended family to move forward, but the community as well.
You mentioned that Joe Biden and how supportive he's been of the work that you've been doing with him now on the Democratic Party's ticket, essentially going to be the Democratic nominee for president. There's a real moment here where this inaction that we've seen since 2018 on gun control, despite all of the work that you've been doing, despite the public support out there for the gun safety measures that you've been proposing and others like you have supported, we've now got a real moment where we can see potentially this is it. Joe Biden could win the presidency, Democrats could retake the Senate and certainly some key seats and then pass these legislation. What would you really want to see in this moment? What policies would you want to see get into legislation to really make that difference?
Well, a couple of things. And there actually has not been inaction on gun safety. When you look across the country in cities and states, it's amazing what's going on. It's at a federal and national level where there has been inaction from the administration and the Senate. The House is passing legislation under the leadership of Speaker Pelosi, and I cannot be more pleased and proud of what they're doing. And so the question is, how do we take that now and finish this? And it is. It's going to be the Senate and the presidency, but it's happening. And, you know, listen, there's a whole bunch of common sense things we can do. I look at everything in this way. Everything I do is all about reducing the gun violence death rate. That's the goal. You have 40,000 plus people a year right now who are dying in this country because of guns. And that number keeps going up. So how do we lower that? Well, clearly, the first and most obvious way is going to be effective background checks with no loopholes. That has to be passed. The idea that the Senate and administration could not do what the House had already done and finish it is mind-boggling. So that's number one. And background checks should also be done on ammunition. So we're working on Jamie's law. It's been introduced in the House and the Senate, which would extend background checks to ammunition. And I believe so strongly in this because you're now in a place in this country where you have almost 400 million guns on the street. They're not all in the hands of people who mean you well. And people who are prohibited purchasers of firearms, they're also by law prohibited from buying ammunition, but there's no requirement for a background check on ammunition. So you may be in possession of guns illegally, you may have stolen your weapon, and you can walk into the store and buy the bullets. So we need to fix that. We need to do extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws across this country. They are saving lives in every state that they've been passed in. We need to raise the age 21. We need to ban high capacity magazines. But the one thing, a couple of other things, we need to pass additional funding for the CDC. Because you can't say, there's nothing we can do about this if you won't even study the problem. To be clear, you have a problem. So we need to be able to do that. But Joe Biden is committed to doing something that I think changes this entire dynamic, which is repealing PLCA, the federal law that makes it illegal to sue the gun manufacturers. If you want to change how guns are handled in this country, make people liable for their behavior in spreading this nightmare across our country. Call the executives of the retailers and the manufacturers and ask them, what were you thinking when you created this marketing program geared towards 17-year-olds? What were you thinking when you produced millions of AR-15s every year, which is way beyond the needs of the sport market, which they always like to claim? What were you thinking Did you actually ever account for the fact that some of these would be used in crimes that you kill people? What did you do about it? I want these people on the stand, and I want them held accountable. If you want to change the reality of gun violence in this country, open up the lawsuits, and we'll get that done.
One of the policies that you've been really supportive of but aren't currently pushing for is the complete ban of assault-style weapons. We've seen in places like Australia, the Port Arthur mass shooting there, they banned assault weapons. In New Zealand, after the mosque shooting, we saw them ban those weapons. Why is Congress and why are particularly Republicans and those in the Senate refusing to ban assault weapons?
Well, two reasons. A, they are utter and complete cowards. They're not leaders, they're cowards. And they are beholden to an organization that utilizes money to create fear that they might be primaried by somebody to the right of them. You know, the NRA has behaved like a terror group, not just creating gun violence into victims of gun violence, but in essence, they have those Republican legislators afraid the NRA could turn around and rather than using the money to support them, use the money against them. So they're cowards. They don't stand up for anything that could potentially cost them their seat, even if they know it's right. You know, on the issue of AR-15s, believe it or not, I did not start out calling for a ban after my daughter was killed. Because every time you talk about a ban, people run left and right, and they stop talking about all the other stuff that we could do to save lives. What changed me is watching these groups of protesters that show up to, for example, in Virginia, where Moms Demand mothers were peacefully protesting, and they were confronted by protesters covering their faces with AR-15 strapped to their shoulder. We're seeing this in the coronavirus protests now. People are showing up with AR-15 strapped to their shoulder. So these people who believe they have a right to an AR-15 now also appear to think they have a right to try and intimidate others with their AR-15. That's no longer about sport, you know, the way they marketed that. That is about intimidation and saying, if you try to do something that I don't like, I may use this on you. So you know what? Those AR-15 owners with those protests have pushed me to a place of believing that those things should be banned and those protesters should never be allowed to carry them in public.
The NRA that you were talking about there, the National Rifle Association, the biggest gun group in America, for those that aren't completely aware
of. And shockingly not the most insane either.
The NRA even themselves recognize the risk of the threat of carrying guns and the problem that exists there. Because as you pointed out at the NRA convention in Dallas, when Vice President Mike Pence was scheduled to speak there, they prohibited guns from being held by NRA conference attendees because they thought there could be a potential threat and a potential risk. How hypocritical is it from these organizations to be out there saying everyone should have a right to have these guns? There's no risk. People are able to have these guns and, you know, control them and use them in a sensible manner. But then as soon as it's their conference and their setting, they go, actually, we don't want these guns here.
Yeah. You can't bring them in there. You have the legislators who think there should be no change, but they'll never allow one of those protesters in their office with an AR-15, you know, in the Senate buildings. No, it's completely hypocritical. It's nonsensical. It is, the NRA is nothing more than a gun-selling organization. That's all that they are. In fact, I actually just tweeted something this morning that they are reaching out to everybody receiving their COVID relief funds from the government and telling them to use those funds, not on food, not on paying your electric, to go out and buy guns. So that's what the NRA is. They are a terror group. They do not care about safety. They don't care about your safety. They don't care about the safety of those you love. They care about the gun sellers they represent. Period. Full stop.
Following a mass shooting, every time one happens, you see someone say, and you've pointed out this issue, the conversation afterwards is always way too polite, it's way too comfortable, and it's way too temporary. And people will go, it's too soon, it's wrong to politicize this. Why are we talking about this when we should be mourning the loss of these individuals? And that's always what people say, so the conversation can't happen on violence and the issue around guns. How did you deal with that backlash? Because yourself and the other individuals at Parkland who stood up against gun violence immediately afterwards faced this backlash. How did you deal with it? And what do you say to those individuals who say, we can't have this conversation now?
The second my daughter was killed, I realized I was already too late. Okay? The fact that I didn't turn up and speak after all the other instances of gun violence is a guilt that I will live with the rest of my life. But the day she was killed, it was already too late. Every time there's an instance of gun violence, it is not a time for people to shut up. It is a time for people to scream that we are continuing to allow this to happen. And so how do you deal with it? You ignore those who tell you, you ought to sit down and be quiet about this. We need a few weeks to deal. Wrong, okay? We're putting people in cemeteries. It's too late. And so nobody will ever tell me again when I can or should speak about this. But, you know, I'm glad you brought up the idea of what I used to say about this conversation, because it was always way too comfortable, way too temporary, and way too polite. And it was just go away. And I refused to make people comfortable when I was talking about what happened to my daughter. There's no chance I was going to be temporary. And I didn't feel the need to be polite. I wanted to have civil conversation, but I wasn't letting you or anyone else off the hook. What happened to my daughter was preventable. What happened to the other 16 was preventable. What happened to all the people before them was preventable. And what continues to happen is preventable. We're no longer letting people off the hook. We are going to get this change done.
Mass shootings are really painful for the families affected. They're painful for anyone in the community who sees what happens. And to add to that pain, you have organizations like the NRA and you have organizations like InfoWars coming out and directly attacking individuals like yourself from accusations of politicizing a tragedy to accusing it of being a false flag attack. How much distress have those attacks caused yourself and those around you? And do they sometimes make you think this is too much, or do they just motivate you further and say, you know what, people are going to be like this, I'm just going to fight harder, I'm going to fight stronger?
You know, listen, I wish it didn't happen. I wish people didn't do that. The majority of that stuff, honestly, comes from paid trolls and bots. That's reality. I mean, earlier on in this process, I used to have some people in law enforcement when I felt like people were going over the edge, look into it. It was always coming from places that weren't even in this country, okay? You know, you track the IP addresses and you realize these are paid bots, they're paid trolls. Now, not everybody, though. So when it's coming from somebody who you know is in this country or from one of these organizations directly, I don't run from it. You know, I believe sunlight is the greatest way of exposing people. And so if you're going to do that and you think because you made a comment to me, for example, in a thread on Twitter and no one's going to notice, just know that I will highlight it. I will expose it. Okay. I will retweet it for the world to see, because those are the kinds of things that people do. You know, listen, they do it to intimidate and they try to get people to stop. Okay. I'm not going anywhere. So just understand, you can be as nasty to me as you want. I've heard it all at this point. There's nothing people haven't said to me on Twitter. So it's sort of like I'm almost now immune to it. Now we're just going to keep on exposing it because the mission that I'm on here to bring civility and decency back throughout this process of getting gun safety done isn't going away.
We've talked about the positive potential future in Congress, in the White House, with what's coming down the road. In November, people have a real chance to make a change and have their voice heard on issues like this and get Congress to really take note and listen. But in America, obviously, the Supreme Court, because Donald Trump has been able to appoint two justices to it, has made it a conservative Supreme Court. Does that concern you, the impact this conservative Supreme Court could have on gun rights and gun control in America? Or do you think there are ways around that? And not just on that issue, on other issues out there, and talk about the passion that you fight for on political issues that you care about, but your daughter also was passionate about. Does it concern you, this future, because of the Supreme Court and what it looks like?
What a timely question, because there was actually just a ruling by the Supreme Court yesterday on a issue of guns, which their ruling surprised me in a pleasant way, but they're getting ready to take on more cases. So it scares the daylights out of me. Listen, the gun lobby has shown they're losing the argument legislatively. They're losing it politically. You can just look at the trends. And that's going to continue after this next election. Where they have a bit of a strength right now, and they're taking advantage of it, is the courts. They're filing lawsuits like crazy. Everything they don't like, lawsuit. Now, the truth is, as far as I'm concerned, keep the NRA filing lawsuits, because ultimately they can't fund all the lawsuits they're filing. It'll just further weaken them. But those cases scare the daylights out of me. And the Supreme Court scares the daylights out of me. When I was at the Kavanaugh hearings and I went up to introduce myself, shake the man's hand, all I wanted to say to him was, you and your beautiful family live in a community like mine. This could have happened to you. Please remember that when you have a chance to rule on something like this. That's the entirety of what I wanted to say to him. Never got the chance because he turned around. But they scare the daylights out of me. My hope, and I'm counting on it, is that President Biden will also have his chance to appoint justices, and we'll start to get some normalcy back.
Over the next 4 years, it's likely that whoever's in the White House will have the power to nominate at least one, if not two, Supreme Court justices who will have the power to decide on a myriad of cases. How important is this election? How important is it for people to go out there and vote and make their voice heard on these issues in November?
Oh, listen, it is this people always say this is the election of our lifetime. And in a normal election, this Supreme Court issue may have been the most important issue. This is not a normal election, but the Supreme Court issue is vitally important because of the role they will play, not only in this issue of gun violence, but restoring our democracy and issues that matter for the standpoint of so many other freedoms. So this Supreme Court issue really is so crucial and so critical. And I just want to say that, listen, in November, the voters in this country are going to show up. They're going to get out and vote, and it's going to be a resounding victory. We're going to elect Joe Biden president, and we're going to flip the Senate, and we're going to hold the House. I'm a believer in divided government as much as anybody. However, in this moment in time, the remnants of what was once the Republican Party, because it isn't right now, that are currently there, leading, they need to be gone. We can go back to bringing in other newer versions of that party, but the remnants of what was once a really strong, proud GOP, it doesn't exist. They need to be fired, the ones who are there now.
Finally, for any politicians listening out there, what would your closing message to them be, looking ahead to November as we have done? What would be your closing message to those politicians out there?
You are voted to defend America, not to defend your seat. You are voted to defend our democracy, not to get acquainted with forces that are about protecting somebody who doesn't believe in our democracy, and that's the current occupant of the White House. So if you're on the right side of defending America and defending our democracy, I look forward to welcoming you back after the election. And if you're not on the right side of that and you refuse to defend America and you refuse to defend our democracy, as the current occupant of the White House used to say, you're fired.
Fred Guttenberg, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Fred Guttenberg, who has dedicated his life to fighting gun violence. You can find out more about him on Twitter at Fred_Guttenberg and Orange Ribbons for Jamie at orangeribbonsforjamie.org. That's all for today's episode. What did you think about that interview? Let me know on Twitter at Edward T. Hardy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe, or recommend this podcast by submitting a review online and sharing it with friends and family. Until next time, goodbye.